Hello, I'm Representative Connie Bernardi, and welcome to the Senate File 975 Higher Education Omnibus Conference Committee. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the role to determine the members present.
And I don't believe we have Ms. Mouse, so I can go ahead and take the role for our members and have Tricia take the role for the Senate really quickly here. But Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Vice Chair Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill. Representative O'Neill. Representative O'Neill, present. Representative Keeler.
They had to let me in.
Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
I'll turn it over to Senate staff.
All right, I'll jump in and do it then. Senator Clausen.
Present.
Senator Jasinski.
Jasinski's here.
Senator Goggin. Senator Rarick.
Present.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you very much. Now we will, I want to thank, first of all, our nonpartisan staff for doing a great job yesterday and Chair Tomasoni for leading us through the side-by-side walkthrough of the bill. Today we will be walking through the different and not.
You're muted.
Was I muted the whole time or did it mute halfway through?
You got to the point where you thanked me and then you should. Oh.
And then it stopped the show. Okay, for walking us, I wanted to thank everyone who helped us walk through the bill, the side-by-side yesterday. And today we'll be walking through the different and identical, non-identical provisions in the House and Senate versions of Senate File 975 and pausing to give members a chance to discuss and ask questions. We will not be adopting any language today. This is simply a chance for members to ask questions and learn more about the different provisions in each version of the bill. I will also remind members that as we don't have a target, we won't be able to have a substantive discussion around the appropriations in each bill. I'll ask that members who have questions or comments to please use their raise hand feature on the Zoom to let me know that they would like to be called on. We will start with the House-only provisions, followed by the Senate-only provisions, and finally, we will walk through the provisions with substantial differences. Our nonpartisan staff has been kind enough to provide us with a version of a side-by-side summary that orders the provisions by each of these categories. We will have them give us each a brief reminder of the provision, and I'll ask them to let us know which page and line we are on in each provision. I will pause at each section to give members a chance to ask questions or discuss. With that, I would like to turn it over to our nonpartisan staff to lead us through the House-only provisions, starting with Article 1. Mr. Savory, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members for the tape. Ken Savory, House Fiscal Staff. I'll be just addressing the document that the chair mentioned in her opening remarks. I'll be starting on page 1 with the R11 in the left-hand side of the column. It's the Office of Higher Education Addiction Medicine Graduate Medical Education Fellowship. This was a new appropriation in the House language. I'll then move down to R11 through R12. which is the Office of Higher Ed Aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarships Appropriation. Then another House-only item on R17, which is the Minnesota State.
Just 1 minute, please. I want to go back and just give members a chance to ask questions if they have exception, because we actually did this yesterday. Can we start at the beginning, Mr. Savory, and then I'll just pause and ask. I was getting my my document ready here. So could you please start at the beginning, and then I'll pause for questions or discussion?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Again, I'll start at the top. It says House only at the top in the gray bar. For the color copy, it is the pink items or salmon items. And the first one is on row R11, and it's the Office of Higher Ed Addiction Medicine Graduate Medical Education Fellowship.
Okay, members, are there any questions? And I'm going to just pause for a second just in case people aren't used to using their hand function here. I see Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. I think we've supported this in the past, if I'm correct. Maybe someone could comment on that or give it.
One of our nonpartisan staff, could you please answer Senator Claussen's question?
Madam Chair and members, I believe, yes, this has been a part of various omnibus bills in the past. I don't have the exact year in front of me, but we can go back and take a look and return to the committee with the correct year.
Senator Claussen, do you have a follow-up question?
Well, I just think that this is a worthy program that we should take a look at. I think it's a program that we should support. Addiction medicine is an issue, and if we can get additional physicians that are trained in this area, I think it's a worthy project that we should consider.
Is there any other discussion or comments or questions, I should say?
Sure.
Yes, I'm looking to see who this is, and of course
It's Nathan Hopkins.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, so the legislature last funded the Addiction Medicine Graduate Fellowship in 2017 with a one-time appropriation of $210,000.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, we'll move on to the next provision.
The next provision on the House-only language is R11 through R12. It's the Office of Higher Ed Aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarship Program.
Members, is there any discussion or questions to this one?
Madam Chair,
Chair Tomasoni.
Just a quick question about the language. Does it require graduates to teach in Minnesota for a certain amount of time after receiving $25,000, or is it open-ended on what they do?
Mr. Hopkins, would you like to answer that question?
Madam Chair, there is no work requirements for recipients. So there's no requirement that they teach in Minnesota after graduation.
Okay, and then is there, do we know how many current students of color would be eligible for the scholarship?
We will ask, I'll throw that question over to the Office of Higher Education. Who would see if they can help us out with that answer?
Madam Chair, this is Nikki Oliver.
Go ahead, Ms. Oliver.
For the record, my name is Nikki Oliver. I'm the manager of grants and government relations for the Office of Higher Education. We would have to get back to you. I don't know if we've run numbers for this program in particular about the potential numbers. I believe the coalition would definitely have that on hand immediately, and I'll try to get you all something as soon as possible.
Okay. Well, once we get targets,
Chair Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once we get targets, we'll have a better idea of what we can do on programs like this.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay. Please continue, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair, the next item is on R17. It's the Minnesota State Career and Technical Education Pilot Program.
Members, are there questions, discussion? I don't see any. Mr. Savory, please continue.
The next item is on R23. It's the University of Minnesota System Special, and this house-only item was the increase to NRRI as part of the rider language.
Members, are there any questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Chair Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, this is actually up near my district, and we will want to talk about this later on because we do some pretty good work there.
Okay, can you repeat the end of what you said on that? I did not hear the ending, sorry.
The NRRI is in my district, and they do some pretty good work there, but everything's going to depend on whether or not we have money to do these kinds of things.
Thank you. Senator Claussen. You're muted.
Thank you. I agree with Senator Tomasoni. I've got a chance to visit there and tour. They do a lot of good research work, and I think this is something we can certainly consider for the future. So thank you.
Hey, please, I see no further hands up. We will continue, Mr. Savory.
The next item in the House only provisions is on R26 at the bottom of page one, and it's the federal funds replacement language regarding the CRF and American Rescue Plan.
Members, is there any discussion or questions about this? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just really wanted to say this is a really good provision. It should be in every single omnibus bill, and it's making sure that if federal funds can be used and replace some of this money, that it is. So I hope that the Senate takes a good look at it and also agrees that we want to use these. We want to spend the federal funds instead of the almost $2.7 billion being appropriated by the governor. I think it's really important that the legislature do the appropriations. And so this is one step in that direction.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion or questions? Seeing none, Mr. Savory, do you have more to continue?
Madam Chair, that concludes the House-only language on page one. With your permission, I would pass the presentation over to Ms. Grunewald to handle the the Senate-only items on the document.
Thank you. And I'm trying to find her on my screen. Ms. Grunewald, please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, I'm Hannah Grunewald. I'm the Senate Fiscal Analyst on the Higher Ed Committee. And I'll begin by picking off where Mr. Savory left off on page two of the side-by-side comparison document that staff put together. Beginning on R1 of the revisors side-by-side, the Senate has a base set for the fiscal year 2024 and after, whereas the House does not. So if anybody has any questions on this provision.
Ms. Grunewald, can you say, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the side-by-side page number. I'm following a different document that I'm taking notes on.
R1.
Okay. Are there any questions?
That's the state.
Thank you. Are there any questions or discussion? Okay, so I think I have a question about this one, but of course, I put it back in my book. So this is not the question I have. So please proceed. I see no hands up. Continue.
All right. So the next Senate only change would be on R6 of the side-by-side. And this is the dual training competency grants to the Department of Labor and Industry.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that this request actually came from the administration, and I'm just curious as to why the Senate didn't do this. It basically is just switching the appropriation straight to DALI as opposed to giving it to OHE and then OHE transferring it to DALI. There isn't any other change other than not having to do the transfer. So I'm just wondering if they had some other reason why they didn't just appropriate the money straight to DALI instead of going through OHE and then to DALI.
Would like to take that question. Chair Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, this change required the Jobs Committee to pick up the amount to avoid defunding the program. Some stakeholders had some questions about this, so this wasn't.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Tomasoni, what concerns would stakeholders have? Were they worried that the Senate wouldn't do the appropriation directly to DALI, or like it would just disappear, or what was the concern?
Chair Tomasoni.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, it's just a matter of how OHE and DALI administer things, and so stakeholders wanted to make sure that they had a handle on how this thing was going to be handled. And so I guess we'll find out in the very near future.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I'm wondering if OHE could weigh in. I know that this is how it was set up in 2015 because I was the author of the bill back then, and I'm just wondering, does OHE have an issue of not receiving that appropriation and then sending it on to DALI? It just seems like a cleaner transaction if we just send it directly to DALI as opposed to go to OHE then to DALI. So I'm wondering if they have any concerns.
Okay. Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dennis Olson, Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Representative O'Neill, yes, you're correct. There are no concerns. This came from the administration, has been worked out with DALI, and is a recommended change. And the House bill does have it traveling in the companion appropriation is through the jobs bill on the House side.
And Representative O'Neill, I do see that Mr. Hopkins has his hand up. I would like to call on him, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, just to sort of echo what the commissioner just mentioned, but so the House bill, the Jobs Appropriation Bill, which is Senate File 1098, currently in conference committee, on the House side, it does have that $200,000 going directly to DALI. The Senate bill does not. So whether or not this conference committee decides to adopt the House or the Senate stance on this issue, that should really be decided in conjunction with whatever the conference committee decides on Senate File 1098, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Okay. Representative Whitneal, do you have a follow-up?
Just thank you for that clarification, and I hope that the Jobs Committee is listening. I know one member is, and I hope that they take that action, that they can just make this appropriation directly to Dolly. It really is a net zero difference. It's just a transfer, so it seems like a cleaner way to do this.
Okay, Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair and members, the next Senate-only provision shows up on R9 through R10. And this is the Minnesota Independence College and Community Appropriation. And the Senate version expands some of the use of the funds.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it just solely the expansion of what they can use it for, or was there an additional appropriation?
Would like
Madam Chair, I can.
Okay, Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, there is an additional appropriation increase in the Senate bill of $1 million each year increased, so that the total appropriation over the biennium is $4 million.
Representative O'Neill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I know we heard quite a bit of testimony in the House side, and we understand that this program is, it can grow and expand pretty easily. It can definitely accommodate that additional fund. So I just wanted, I was wondering too, can you tell me exactly what additional funds or what they could use the funds for?
Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, the Senate language expands the use of the funds to be used related to expanding the program. And then additionally, the Senate language directs MICC to explore plans to expand programming outside of the seven county metro.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I'm guessing that you're done by your expression, I think. Okay, there we go, hands down. And then Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure who wants to answer this, but it is regarding the MICC expansion. I've had a lot of conversations with them in general, and it's never really come up in our conversations, this expansion. I am here representing Greater Minnesota, and that's not been one of the parts of the conversations I've had with them. So is there somebody who can elaborate on what the plan is or why that would be an extension or where in Greater Minnesota?
Let's see. Chair Tomasoni, do you want to take that, or?
Why don't you repeat the question?
Representative Keeler.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question is, it talks about MICC having an expansion, additional location outside of the seven county metro, which to me is language saying that they're looking to expand it into Greater Minnesota. I represent Greater Minnesota, and I've had a lot of conversations with MICC, and this expansion has never been brought to my attention. So I'm just wondering if somebody can elaborate on what that expansion looks like or who's requesting that.
Chair Tomasoni.
It's one of the best autism programs there is in the state. And so there's also need in rural Minnesota. So it seems like it's just a logical thing to do.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree. I think this is a phenomenal program. I actually stand in great support for what it's doing in our community and also for the gain on investment with it. My question is more around, where is it intended to expand in Greater Minnesota? Is it just an idea that we want to try to implement, or is there actual tangible plans of a location?
Chair Tomasoni.
We can ask that question of MICC, but they definitely agreed to the language.
Representative Keeler, do you have any follow-up?
Nope, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess this would be a follow-up on Representative Keeler's question. You know, Greater Minnesota is a very large region in our state. And I'm wondering, is the plan to start in one region, let's say the north or the south, and then move to other regions? Or have they identified a location? And which region would that be?
Chair Tomasoni, did you want to take that question?
This is a decision by MICC. So they would be in charge of where it would go and how they would do it. So we'd have to have that discussion with them.
Thank you so much.
Let's see. And I have one follow-up question to that too. Can you tell me how much, and this would probably be to Ms. Grunewald, how much of these funds that are additional dollars are spent directly on the students, how much of the dollars are for planning?
Madam Chair and members, I don't believe the Senate language includes a specific dedication for what's being spent on expanding versus students. The language just includes the expansion direction for MICC.
Thank you. Members, is there any more discussion or questions? Seeing none, Ms. Grunewald, if you could proceed.
Madam Chair and members, the next Senate-only change item shows up on R11 of the side-by-side, and this is the Senate-only Fostering Independence Higher Education Grants. And the Article 1 has just the appropriation language. There is more detail on this appropriation in Article 2.
Member, are there any questions regarding this? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we had a presentation about this in the House, and I'm just trying to remember how many foster kids they anticipated could use the grant money. And I have a vague recollection, but I'm wondering if Chair Tomasoni happens to know.
Chair Tomasoni.
This would be appropriate for Senator Rarick to answer.
Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am going to have to reach out to the group that brought this forward to get that number. I do not remember it off the top of my head.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
I know that there were some, yes, thank you. I know that there were some amendments made or some changes made on the Senate side compared to what we heard, I believe, making it a little bit easier for the private schools to accommodate, because it was a big chunk of money that they would have had to forgiven. And I'm just wondering if Senator Rarick could tell us what that difference is now and how it's a little bit easier for the private schools to accommodate them.
Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The private schools had long conversations with the group and myself. The majority of them are in agreement with doing this, but the language is put in that any private institution can opt out of this. They do not have to offer it. So each institution will be able to make that decision if they will provide that extra funding needed for any foster youth that go to their college.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe that the amount that the schools had to forgive became smaller, because I thought it had something to do with the base was like Penn State, and then they changed it to the University of Minnesota, which is a higher amount. Senator Rarick, did that change happen in the Senate side?
Senator Rarick.
Madam Chair, I believe, yes, that the we did switch to that number, and so it is a lower responsibility for the private institutions.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. No, I like the changes. I know that I had concerns with it when it was on the House side, and there have been some accommodations made as it made its way to the Senate, and it sounds like good changes, especially having it sort of be, you could, the private schools kind of opt in if they wanted to do it and weren't forced to do it. It's always a difficult thing to tell a private institution that they have to basically eat the cost of something. So if they want to, they can, instead of being forced to. So I like the changes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank
you. I saw Ms. White's hand was up. Did she want to add something, or I see it's put down again. I just wanted to make sure. Ms. White.
Madam Chair and members, can you hear me?
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify, but Representative O'Neill was correct in her assessment of what happened with the private schools with the amendments to the Senate bill.
Thank you. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in looking at this on the side-by-side on R11, I do not see that there is any administrative appropriation for administering these grants. Am I missing something, or is that administration piece missing?
Who would like to answer that question? Chair Thompson, should I ask Ms. Grunewald, excuse me, I'm so sorry. Or
Madam Chair, I can answer that.
Okay.
I don't believe that we have, or the Senate language has an administration component, at least in Article 1. And I will double check Article 2 to make sure that there's no administration costs there either. But I don't believe for this program, the Senate language includes an administration allocation.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cleburne.
Yeah, that causes me a little bit of concern. If this is a new grant program, I'm wondering if there will need to be changes to the IT system that would also be required. I don't know who could answer that for me.
Commissioner Olson or Ms. Oliver, who would like to, would one of you would like to answer that? Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, certainly don't know the exact cost, but we do know this would be a substantial brand new financial aid award that we would have to, you know, essentially stand up from the ground up. So this would have some significant initial costs, at least to start.
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would appreciate it if OHI could maybe let us know sometime before we get our budget targets, what that would look like. I would appreciate that. And then the other piece that I would like to know about is if there are federal grants that could be used first, are these higher education grants for intended to be second in line, or are they intended to be first in line?
Who would like to answer? Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is meant to be the final piece, so they would use any other funding that they can receive first, and then this would be the final piece to cover their funding for college.
Then I would ask, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Cleburne.
Maybe we could consider clarifying that language if we go forward with this piece. That might be something that would be intention is not written down. So if we could maybe think about clarifying that, that would be great. Thank you so much. I appreciate your answers to the questions.
Thank you. Senator Rarick, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair. I do believe, you know, if we're looking on R11, that's just the funding. I do believe it is clear in the language later in other sections that this is the final piece.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And I see that Ms. Grunewald has her hand up. Did you have something to add to this question?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Cleburne, I reviewing the appropriation does include the full cost of a fiscal note done on this program, which does include staffing costs. So I just wanted to add that in, that although the language doesn't include an administration specific allocation, the funding does cover what was calculated in the fiscal note.
in that case, Madam Chair?
Representative Cleburne.
I would like to see that added to the language then, so that the language would be permissive for the administrative fee then. Thank you so much.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I have to start by saying I really appreciate that this is a conversation. You know, creating opportunities for all of our students to enter into higher education is really important, and our foster care youth deserve the same options. I do have a couple questions, and I know that this is only one part of it, and I am trying to look in the second part of this as well, but I don't see anything that states, I know it says that it's eligible for 5 years. Does that include summer?
Who would like to tackle that question? I'll look for some hands.
Madam Chair and Representative Kuhler.
Ms. Grunewald.
Would you mind repeating your question? I know you were saying if summer would be included, if you'd just mind repeating that question.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yep, that is the question. I know in here it just says that grants are up to 5 years. If it includes summer, I would just like that language to be in there, because I know as we've worked with other grants in other capacities, some of them have summer eligibility and some of them do not. I would really advocate for this one, including summer.
Okay. Thank you. Do you have any follow-up, Representative Keeler?
That would be it.
Okay. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just had a quick follow-up. So MICC already contacted me regarding their previous question, and they've already had conversations to expand to Moorhead, Alexandria, Duluth, and St. Cloud, and adding summer school summer camps is how they described it across the state. So hopefully that helps, Representative Keeler.
Okay, thank you. Representative Keeler, do you have a follow-up for this amendment? I mean, not this amendment, this provision?
I guess my hand was still up, but thank you, Representative O'Neill, for the quick response on that, especially as that's something in my community. It would be nice if they would maybe share some of that information with me as well. Thank you for that.
Okay, members, I see no further hands. Is there any other discussion? Okay, Ms. Grunewald, if you could continue, please.
Madam Chair and members, the next Senate-only provision shows up on R13, and this is the maintenance of effort requirement for the Office of Higher Education to request waivers for the maintenance of effort requirement under the federal COVID packages.
Members, are there any questions? Representative Cleburne.
Yes, I hate to say this, but I'm really quite ignorant of this provision. So if the Office of Higher Ed could maybe explain to me what this is actually about, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, I'll see who takes their mute button off first. And Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Cleburne. I'll do my best to walk through what it means, although we are still in the process of reviewing the most recent guidance that was released from the U.S. Department of Education just last week, I believe. And it was guidance specific to maintenance of effort and waiver requests under the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Act, so it's ESSER. So it was primarily the E-12 provisions, as well as the GEAR funds, Governor's Emergency Education Relief funds that were included in the CARES Act and the CRISA. There are some provisions in there around HERF funds. Those were the Higher Education Emergency Relief Funds, in terms of the state maintaining its effort, essentially the average that the state appropriates, maintaining that specific dollar amount or percentage. But we would be taking the lead, of course, from the Minnesota Management and Budget, as well as the Minnesota Department of Education on any specific maintenance of effort request. None of the HERF funds or really all of any of the other federal funds, aside from a subcontract through the Minnesota Department of Education for the Gear 1 funds actually came to the office. So this more than likely won't be applicable to the Office of Higher Education, but, you know, certainly willing to work through it if it does become a requirement. I will just note, too, that the requirement to submit a waiver is due May 17th for the most current guidance that was released.
Representative Cleburne, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, members, is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Grunewald, if you could please continue.
Madam Chair, members, I'll also add just a little bit of more context to the maintenance of effort provision. I do believe that the Minnesota Department of Education also has a provision in the E-12 bill, Omnibus Senate bill, to request a maintenance of effort. And the Minnesota Department of Education waiver may also include that for higher education. So this language may not be needed in order for higher education funds to be waived, or excuse me, for the maintenance of effort requirement to be waived on higher education funds. So that's something that I can work with MMB and other nonpartisan staff on to make sure if we actually do need this language or not. Including it, I believe, wouldn't necessarily hurt anything, but obviously would make more work for the Office of Higher Education. So I just wanted to make that known as well, that this language is something that continues to be worked on by staff.
Thank you.
So then I'll move on to, oh, excuse me.
No, please continue.
Okay, I thought I heard something. Madam Chair and members, the next Senate-only provision is the under Minnesota State, and that's on R14. The Senate increases funds to the Central Office and Shared Services Unit for Minnesota State and sets a base for this. And that is why there is a base set for fiscal year 24 and after.
Member, are there any questions or discussion?
So Madam Chair.
Chairman Tomasoni.
Ms. Grunewald described it, but this the central office was cut by 10% back in 2011, and they've been frozen in place ever since. And so they've managed to limp along ever since at this level. But I think they're at a point where they might not be able to survive much without a little bit of an increase here. And so we gave them an increase because they do deliver all the services within the 30 colleges and 7 universities. So that's the reason for this, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair, the next Senate-only provision shows up on R14 to R15 of the side-by-side. And this is a Minnesota State online tuition differential refund for students who had online courses in the 2020-21 academic year.
Is there any discussion or any questions? Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious as to where this comes from. And, you know, I try to think about things like the how. How does this get implemented? What would be the cost of implementing this? And then what is the real intent and driver? I mean, it almost says to me as I read it that online courses aren't as valuable to the students as in-person classes. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out the why behind this provision.
Okay. Yeah, Ms. Grunewald. I'm sorry. I had my page bring me some documents. And so, Ms. Representative Cleburne, could you just restate that question? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out the why or the how behind this provision. You know, how would the institutions do this? And then also, what would be the cost of the institutions doing this? I think that's a big concern that I have. And then what is the statement that we as an institution or as a body trying to give with this? Anyway, that's my question.
Who would like to answer that question?
Okay, Madam Chair.
Chair Tomasoni.
I would, I have an idea what the answer is, but I should probably turn it over to Senator Kaczynski. This was his bill.
Thank you, Senator Kaczynski. Did I say
that? Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Representative Cleburne.
All right, so I'm just trying to figure out, we are on the online tuition differential refund. Is that correct? I just want to make sure I'm in the right place. That's correct.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So in looking at this vision, I'm just trying to get my head around how institutions would do this, right? What would be the costs of the institutions for trying to go back and do this? And then are we sending as a body a message that the online courses that students are provided are not the same quality or caliber as in class? And I'm just trying to figure out the background of this provision. Thank you.
Sure. And I don't have the paperwork in front of me because I'm over in the Senate chambers trying to go in session here. And so maybe Tricia can answer that. But the concern that was brought to me was the classes are not as effective as in-person classes. I have two kids in college, and I've been watching their online classes. I don't believe they're as effective as an in-person class, and therefore don't think that the tuition should be paid the same.
Okay, Representative Cleburne. Chair Tomasoni.
In many instances, they charged even more for online classes. In some cases, they were double. And so this is a matter of just trying to get some equity back into the tuition rates for the same class that they might be taking in person as they're taking online. Senator Jasinski can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think that's the intent here.
That is correct, Senator Tomasoni.
Last session in conference committee, there was quite a bit of testimony about how much more expensive online classes are to produce than in-person classes, but I don't want to debate that as much as I'm trying to figure out how much will it cost the institutions and the work that it will require the institutions to go back and do this. You know, refunds are one thing, but there's also a cost in doing the work to make that happen.
So we should point out, representing that these are four courses that were charged extra just during the pandemic, and so it's the type of thing that is. I mean, you just can't justify it just because there was a pandemic that we're going to double the price of tuition for an online course, and so some of these students are. We're going to offer them a refund, and it can be done easily, and it's in the fiscal note on how to do it. And I know that this is Senator Jasinski's bill, so I'll let him add to it if he'd like to.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. So again, yes, I agree. And I believe there's also a lot of one-time federal funds coming that we could use the money for this to offset these costs right now for what they're charging excess. Above regular classes and above what a normal online class would cost.
Okay, and I see we have some staff that have their hands up. First one is Ms. White.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, this was Senator Jasinski's bill, and the rider actually states that if the online course that the student was forced to take during this pandemic was not offers as an online course in the previous year, then they are entitled to a credit. This is to take care of the students who ended up paying more for an online class when they had actually signed up for an in-person class.
Thank you. Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair, there is a fiscal note on this provision when it was a bill. And I can just briefly touch on the administration costs that are listed in the fiscal note, which is $567,500. And that would be to refund 4,421,000 students with a total fiscal note cost of around 5 million in fiscal year 2021.
Can you, and Ms. Grunewald, I was writing that down and I didn't catch all the numbers. Can you repeat that, please?
Yes, absolutely. Madam Chair, the administration costs are $567,500. And then that administration cost is in order to refund 4,421 students. That's not correct. Sorry. One moment. That's the amount of dollars, not the amount of students. Apologies for that. So 4,421,000 in total refunds to students. So the total of that would be 4,988,500. And I can follow up with those numbers as well.
Thank you. Representative Cleburne, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Chair Bernardi. I would really appreciate seeing that fiscal note, and I'm just wondering how the number of students was calculated. How do they know how many students took these different classes?
Ms. Grunewald, does the fiscal note tell us that, or are you able to tell us that?
Madam Chair, I would have to look at the fiscal note a little bit longer, but Representative Cleburne, I can share with you the fiscal note and review it and let you know if that's stated. I do know that they do state that the Office of Higher Education estimated 205,000 credits. So I believe they would have calculated that through looking at their records, but I can look deeper into the fiscal note, or if the Office of Higher Education has any input on that.
Thank you very much. I would appreciate that, receiving the fiscal note.
Thank you. We have Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, some of my questions have already been answered, and my last one was, and Ms. Grunewald, thanks for the information. First of all, I'd love to see the fiscal note also. That's possible, if you could share that with me. I just wondered how the calculations were made. When you first said that there were 4 million students, I thought, holy cow. So I get the problem there. I had that written down. I just had questions about how it's actually been calculated and what's the actual number of students that will be affected.
Thank you. Members, is there further discussion or questions? Seeing none, Ms. Grunewald, Senator Claussen, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to say that there are some costs involved in creating online courses. And in 2020, we requested from both Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota a study because we had quite a discussion on this in the Senate to justify those additional costs for online courses. So I think there are some additional costs. And the other thing is that there was, if you look at it as a business transaction, the students received credits if they passed the course and they paid the fee. So I think this is something that we need to look at, especially when you look at the total cost to the universities and colleges involved.
Thank you. No further discussion. Ms. Grunewald, if you could please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, the next Senate-only provision shows up on R15, and this is for workforce development scholarships. The Senate sets a base for fiscal year 2024 and after due to an increased appropriation in fiscal year 22 and 23.
Members, any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed.
So I'll be turning to the next, to page 3 of the staff prepared side by side. And the next Senate only change shows up on R17. And this is a Minnesota State provision for faculty COVID-19 risk stipends to instructors who taught in person in the spring 2021 semester.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? Senator Claussen. Senator Claussen, you're on mute.
I'm going to withdraw my hand up. Thank you.
Representative Christensen. And you're on mute.
I'm so sorry.
No problem.
I wonder if there was any discussion in the Senate about other staff who were affected also by, you know, obviously there are other folks other than professors and, you know, as far as who had to really, in fact, there are many more essential workers that ended up having to go in. So I just wondered if there was discussion about that. Just curious. Thanks.
Chair Tomasoni.
Madam Chair and Representative Christensen, this this particular issue came to me from multiple professors who were just totally concerned about them not being included in the list of people who were considered to be essential workers and who were allowed to get vaccines early on. And they just impressed upon me how important it was for them to be meeting face-to-face. And so, no, I did not have any other discussions with it about, we did not have discussions about other workers. I have received emails about it, though. And so I do understand that there probably were more than just a few people in the schools that were being exposed to students who were in face-to-face instruction situations, but we did not talk about other staff, no.
Vice Chair Christensen, do you have a follow-up?
No, not right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on deck, well, next we have Representative O'Neill and then Representative Keeler on deck. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I used to be the SER chair, so that's the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, and we reviewed all of the state employee contracts. And I happen to know that each of the in-state institutions, they negotiate their own contracts with their faculty. They don't negotiate contracts with anyone else. So all the MAPE and the AFSCME and SEIU employees that are within their institutions, they don't have any control over what they're paid because that's a contract negotiation with MMB. And so, Chair Tomasoni, I'm wondering if you could let us know if, in fact, if we even wanted to do something outside of their contract, since Minn State only negotiates directly with the faculty, is that something that we could even do since this is negotiated by MMB?
Madam Chair.
Chair Tomasoni.
Representative O'Neill, I would think if it's in law, we can do it, number one. And number two, we just did exactly the same thing with the State Patrol. We gave them an 8% increase in their salary, and we did it legislatively. And they do all their negotiating through bargaining units also. So I would think that we can do this.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would point out that when we did it just for the state troopers, it did become problematic because they were only one portion of a bargaining unit. And we came back as a legislature to correct that and actually do that across the entire bargaining unit. So I think that it's a question that we should probably ask outside of
our committee, if we could even do that outside of bargaining units that the institutions do not bargain with.
Madam Chair.
Chair Tomasoni.
It didn't become a problem because it was outside the bargaining unit. It became a problem because some people didn't get the increase. That was when it became a problem. Now, Representative Christensen's question to me is a good one because there are people that would have been in those schools that might have been exposed to students on a little bit different basis than the face-to-face instructors were. So I think it's a good question that we can pursue as we go along here.
Representative Neal, do you have a follow-up?
Well, I would just caution us to go outside of the bargained, the negotiated contracts. It's a sticky wicket when we start to do that. So I would just say that we should probably get a little more expertise before we would move forward to do something that's just for, you know, the MAPE, ASME, SEIU, whoever is within these institutions that this would be on top of their regular bargaining contract. And so I just would caution us to go outside of a contract that we don't, that the institutions don't bargain for.
Representative O'Neill, is that okay? Is that your concluding remark there? Thank you. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just want to bring up that in my conversations that I've had with our faculty around this, yes, there is concern about being in person. I guess the angle that I've been hearing it more on is their concern of feeling like they have to be forced to be back in person in the fall. You know, and we were having conversations around vaccines and wondering if they were going to be listed as a priority or not. So I think going back and giving stipends in the past is one thing I didn't want to miss the opportunity to say in this space from the conversations I've had. The bigger worry that the faculty have is being forced to be in front of in-person classes in the fall. Now that may have changed as our vaccines are getting out quicker than I think they originally planned. I just wanted to share that information from what I'm hearing from my constituents. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair and members, the next Senate-only provisions shows up on R18, and this is for the University of Minnesota tuition rates. The Senate language requests that the Board of Regents reduces tuition by 3% in the next two academic years.
Members, is there any discussion or questions? Okay, seeing none, please proceed.
Madam Chair, the next Senate-only provision shows up on R19. And this is similar to the Minnesota State provision for the University of Minnesota to provide faculty COVID risk stipends to instructors who taught in person in the spring of 2021.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair, that wraps up the Senate-only provisions. I can move into the differences, and Mr. Savory and I can talk about those together if that's what you'd like to do next.
Yes, that would be perfect. Please proceed.
Great. So, Madam Chair, on page, I believe we're on, still on page 3 of the staff prepared side-by-side, and on R4 to R5 of the revisor side-by-side, the Senate language expands reporting requirements for College Possible.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I was looking at it really quickly. I'm wondering if staff could explain what the additional reporting requirements are under the Senate version.
Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, the additional requirements in the Senate language includes geographic distribution of participants, the number of students and college graduates specifically supported by the appropriation. The House has similar language to this, the House language doesn't include supported by the appropriation. And then in the Senate, another reporting requirement would be for percentages of students who apply to college, admitted and enrolled in college in the previous year. And then finally, a list of community and partner institutions benefiting from coaching and support through the College Possible program.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like those additional changes. And just wondering if there was any concern about undue burden or extra burden to those that have to make the requirements, or was that not a problem?
Who would like to answer that question?
Madam Chair.
Chair Tomasoni.
It's my understanding that College Possible actually wrote this language, so I think they are experiencing some things that they would like to clear up.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill, you have a follow-up.
No, thank you. Okay. I didn't know that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to say that those accountability provisions, I think, are good ones, and I think we provided a little bit of additional revenue for them to accomplish this as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill, you still have your hand up. Did you?
Nope.
You do want your hand up.
Just very quickly. I really appreciate this discussion, and I didn't realize that it had actually come from College Possible themselves. I'm assuming that this would help them to show the effectiveness of the program, which is always helpful. So I appreciate the Senate changes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. Grunwald.
Madam Chair, the next two provisions listed on page 3 of the staff side-by-side are the appropriations to spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injury research grants. And here the Senate sets administration percentage as a dollar amount. And I'd like to mention as well that in your packets today, or in your materials today, there is a breakdown of each provision in the higher education omnibus where an administration percent shows up. And it just, the table provided shows what the dollar amount would be for each appropriation under the percentage. And I'd just like to point out that yesterday we had a brief discussion about these being similar amounts. And some of these appropriations are increased in the Senate or increased in the House. So therefore, the administrative dollar amount is going to be different depending on the appropriation amount. So just something to keep in mind as we move forward with the conference committee process. And I'll just refer to that as we work through the rest of these differences for your convenience to look at the differences between the dollar amount and administrative percentage. So another change in the spinal cord injury grant. So the Senate sets a base for fiscal year 24, and that's related to the increase of the appropriation in 22 of 23.
Okay. So members, is there any questions or discussion? I just have a brief question. When you set an administrative cost, a dollar amount, and the amount of funding that's going to that, the percentage seems, I'm kind of answering my own question, it could become a higher percentage or a lower percentage. Is that accurate? We could, if you could just answer that, I'd be great.
Madam Chair, do you mean if the dollar amount were to be in the language and then down the road, if the appropriation were to change, if that dollar amount would change with it, or is that what your question is?
Right. I mean, if the dollar amount if the funding would be reduced or the funding would increase and the administrative cost dollar amount remained the same, the percentage wouldn't follow, correct? I mean, as it, the language is now.
Correct. Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm noticing throughout Senate language that they are setting base in several provisions, and I'm just wondering if they could, I'm seeing it throughout multiple provisions. I'm just wondering if Senator Tomasoni could speak to that. It seems to be common throughout their bill. I'm just wondering if he could speak to it.
Chair Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, we were actually advised to do this by Senate Fiscal. Easier way for them to understand exactly how much money is going into administrative costs by actually showing the dollar. That's what the idea is.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
I don't have the document in front of me. I see that it was in the agenda for today. I had a full morning. And so which document is it that shows, and I'm trying to figure out if the House consistently is doing like a 2.5% or a 5%. Which document should I be looking at to look at that comparison?
Ms. Grunewald, would you be able to answer that question?
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, the document is titled Senate File 975, Admin Percentages versus Dollar Amounts, and that should have been emailed out shortly before committee. And also, Madam Chair, to answer Representative O'Neill's question about the House side percentages, the administration percentage throughout the bill in several provisions stays at 3%.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
I'm just looking for that document so I can see. So I'm sorry. So did you say it was consistent in the House side at 3%, or was it varied from provision to provision?
Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, the House language, to my knowledge, stays at 3% throughout various provisions for the administrative percentage.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So then conversely, when you convert the Senate dollars to a percentage, is theirs consistent at a certain percentage, or is it varied by provision?
Ms. Grunewald.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, the dollar amount does vary depending on the appropriation amount in the bills. So, for example, in the first provision where this shows up is a spinal cord injury grant program. And the Senate has a $5 million appropriation in fiscal year 22, so 3% of that is $150,000, whereas the House language includes a $3 million appropriation in fiscal year 22, which results in a $90,000 administrative costs in dollar amounts using 3%.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Nope, I have it now. Somebody handed me the actual spreadsheet. I was driving for 2 hours to try to get to a spot where I could do committee. And so if you could have staff please send out things the day before, that would be very, very helpful as opposed to the morning before. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I'm sure our staff, whenever possible, will do that. They are incredible, and I will I'm sure they will take note to do that whenever they can. Thank you. It is helpful. Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And this is probably more a comment than a question. My concern about listing dollar amounts is that those are, as you stated earlier, Chair, fixed. And when we use percentages, we can see more readily in policy throughout the bill that it's basically the same. We're not having to do the computation every time. to see exactly what that dollar cost would be. And when I was thinking about other committees that I serve on and what other agencies are charging, I'm wondering if 3% kind of overall is just the department's go-to percentage for administration, I guess is the easiest way for me to say that. So for ease of reviewing the document, I prefer the percentages. That's what I would say. Thank you.
Thank you. Member, is there any further discussion or questions? Okay. Please proceed, Ms. Grunwald.
Madam Chair and members, the next item I'll discuss is on R5, and this is another example of the administration cost as a dollar amount or percentage for the Summer Academic Enrichment Program.
Members, any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed.
Madam Chair, I will move to the next page of the staff prepared side by side, starting with concurrent enrollment courses on R6 and R7 of the revisor side by side. And this is for concurrent enrollment courses, and I can go into more detail on that if members have questions.
Okay, members, are there any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed.
Madam Chair, the next item I'll discuss is on R8 of the side-by-side for student-teacher grants on the Senate side and grants to teacher candidates in shortage areas on the House side. Listed here is also the House provision for grants to underrepresented teacher candidates.
Member, are there any questions or discussions? Discussion. Okay, seeing none, please proceed.
Madam Chair, the next item is on R8 as well. This is the Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. The Senate uses the repayment in the title, whereas the House uses forgiveness in the title. And here there's an administration cost as a dollar amount as well on the Senate side.
Members, any questions or discussion? Please proceed, Ms. Grunwald.
Madam Chair, the next item is on R10, and this is student loan debt counseling. And here's another example of the administration cost as a dollar amount in the Senate language.
Members, any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. Grunwald.
The next provision is on R10, and this is for the Hunger Free Campus grants, which both bodies include language for, but they differ slightly.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? I see Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just one place I just want to thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing my concerns of having a student association make the final decisions as to the appropriation. And so you've changed the language here to say that they're working in collaboration with OHE, with the statewide associations to do the application process. And I just think that's a little bit better accountability and transparency. So I appreciate what we did here in the House for that reason.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. Grunwald.
Madam Chair and members, the next provision is on R12, and this is for direct admissions to the Office of Higher Education.
Members, discussion or questions? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is something that I've spoken about in committee on the floor. I have concerns with the direct admissions program. As I see it, it's $1 million appropriation to put together a working group. On the House side, it's $975,000 of the $1 million to set up the work group and do a little IT in order to send basically a letter to a high school senior telling them that they are eligible if they graduate for a two-year Penn State institution. And I think maybe the Senate has slightly different language, but I really think that there's better use of money than to just send a letter to a high school senior and spend $1 million to figure out how to do it. So I opposed it in committee. I oppose it on the floor, and I think it's not a wise use of $1 million here in this provision.
Members, are there any further questions or discussion? I would ask, like to ask the commissioner or Nikki Oliver if they know what the students that would be most benefited from, or that they're hoping to help attend a college, university, get a credential.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative O'Neill. The change item that was submitted with the proposal has a breakdown of the costs. I know there's been, you know, a lot of question and discussion about, you know, what the related costs actually are for the House version and the governor's proposal. $925,000 in the first year would be utilized to, you know, really develop and establish the program. The change item includes $200,000 for K-12 staff time as well for the K-12 staff that are going to be working to establish the new IT infrastructure. $500,000 will be utilized to actually build the IT infrastructure. There's going to have to be communications design costs, websites, branding, of course. There's costs related to that. There's also staff time for college faculty as well for implementation and modifications on their side for the IT infrastructure. $100,000 for the college IT infrastructure. And really what this amounts to is, you know, there are multiple independent student information systems that high schools utilize. And to be honest, they don't talk well together. We have independent student information systems that don't often share information well with state agencies, whether that be OHE, whether that be the Minnesota Department of Education. And so a large bulk of this initial cost is going to be utilized to build that IT infrastructure. It's a lot more than just a working group. So I wanted to make sure that those costs were accurately reflected. Representative Bernardi, to your question, you know, in looking at similar programs that have been established in other states, multiple other states, the closest to Minnesota would be the Idaho Direct Admissions Program. There they saw a significant increase in college applications as well as college enrollment, and a significant increase in first-generation students applying and being accepted, as well as students of color and low-income students as well. We can get into more testimony later on, but just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you. Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the Commissioner, I'd like to know, would we also be able to reach our homeschooled students and our students attending private institutions as well?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Cleaborn, certainly something that could be considered during the implementation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know in studying the Idaho program, Idaho and Minnesota are two of the 13 states that have a net out-migration of college students. And I know the Idaho program was partially put in place to try to keep students at home by getting a letter indicating that you are automatically accepted to one of the state's higher education institutions. has proven in Idaho to keep more students at home for their education and therefore hopefully entering the workforce in their home state. So that's another benefit of this that I just wanted to point out.
Thank you. Representative, let me see who's up. I have Representative Cleghorn, his hand up. Nope, okay, thank you. Any further discussion or questions this time? Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one more comment on that. I agree with the concern on the cost of this. You know, most of us send letters out every year to our graduating students, and it just seems that we're looking to get a letter out. One letter could be drafted, sent to every high school, and asked to be distributed to every high school senior. Seems to be a much more cost-effective way. I'm not understanding why we would need to develop all of this other infrastructure to make this happen. So I hope when we get into this piece later that we have more of those discussions. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill and then Representative Keeler on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we need to focus on what the end product is, which is literally just a letter out to seniors. And every single one of us in the legislature, all 201 of us, send letters to high school graduates. I just think that $1 million is a lot to literally just send a letter to a high school senior to tell them what they should already know. Okay, so maybe they don't know, and that's unfortunate. We could accomplish this simply by asking every one of us, 201, to send our high school grads, when we send them the graduation letter, to say, hey, did you know, that you can be admitted into these colleges and list them out. I just think this is a misuse of $1 million. So, like I said, I've expressed this in the committee. I've expressed this on the House floor. This continues to be a concern. And I mean, all of us already send letters to our high school grads. And I even do my homeschool kids. So I don't know what we're trying to recreate, but I appreciate this discussion and I hope that we take it seriously moving forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative O'Neill. I know that you've mentioned this a couple places, and I think I came over right after and said, I want whatever language you're going to use, because I do think that that's a great way for us to connect with our constituents. For me, it is the letter, but for me, it's more of a massive recruitment outreach into the areas that especially our first-generation students, individuals who maybe just don't see themselves going to college. And to me, you know, I'm just going to put it out there that money actually invested in our K-12 setting, you know, one of the world's best workforce areas is college and career recruitment and transition. And we all know that our high schools are extremely short when it comes to their counselors on hand, which part of their job duty is to discuss their enrollment into higher ed opportunities. And so, I think that this is a really good idea. I think that creating recruitment opportunities to keep people within our own state has a good long-term investment. I just really want to dig into this a little bit differently from a different lens, because I do see the benefit in it. I do see the fact that we need our systems to communicate much better with each other for a lot of different reasons. But if recruitment is the end goal here, I would just like to dig into it a little bit differently if possible.
Thank you. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I may ask Commissioner Olson to give me a hand on this one, but I know in looking at the Idaho program, they used a set of criteria in looking at an individual student, and the students didn't all get the same letter. There were students that got a letter saying you'd be granted admission to any of the Idaho state universities. And other students might get one that would say you've been granted admission to any of the Idaho community colleges or to technical colleges. So there was a set of criteria that was used in developing and looking at each student individually. So they wouldn't have to go through an application process. They would not have to go through any type of testing ACT, SAT, etc. But maybe Commissioner Olson could comment a little bit on the Minnesota program. I think that maybe this would be the first step in developing a more robust program, but maybe the commissioner would like to comment.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Claussen. Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is an individualized approach. You know, of course, sending out, you know, mass groups of letters is beneficial, but this is really individual for that very reason you just mentioned. So, of course, we start with our open access institutions, primarily the colleges that are associated with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system, as well as the seven universities. But even within the universities, there are different colleges that would require potentially different criteria. And so part of this process is also establishing that criteria that allows colleges within the University of Minnesota system to also potentially participate, and they have expressed interest as well, as well as our member institutions of the Minnesota Private College Council, who have also expressed interest. In all of those additional benchmarks and criterias and standards for admissions would have to be developed, considered for individual letters to students.
Thank you. Senator Claussen, do you have a follow-up?
Madam Chair, I would just like to make another comment because I said Minnesota is one of the 13 states that has a net out-migration of students. In other words, we have more college-age students leaving the state than we have coming to us. And I think that's concerning. And people often talk about, and we're talking about taxes, about the number of people leaving the state once they retire for other warmer states or leaving. If you look at the demographics, the largest group leaving the state of Minnesota are the 18 to 24-year-olds. And I think what Idaho has done, they saw that this is not a positive thing for their state. And I think what we're trying to do is to look at a very similar program that may keep more of our students at home.
Thank you. I see we have one more question here. It's Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is also a question to the commissioner. As I understand it, the costs for this are front-loaded. So the majority of the costs would be for the first year, and then the costs thereafter are significantly reduced. Is my understanding correct?
Yep. Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Cleaborn, that is correct. The ongoing cost is $75,000 annually.
Okay. And then I just want to make sure that—
Representative Cleaborn.
Oh, thank you, Chair Bernardi. I want to make sure that we're all on the same page. The students would receive a letter saying they are eligible for an institution, but they still have to go through the application process. Is that correct?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Cleaborn. Yes, that is correct. So the letter includes all of the information necessary. Of course, it would still apply. The process, though, for implementation could potentially include a common application that would significantly streamline that process. And, you know, depending on outcomes, could be admitted on the spot through the letter.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I could ask—
Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you. I know that when my children were in those years of graduating from high school and choosing their colleges, the other states were quite aggressive in coming after my students based on their SATs and ACT scores. I know that we've had declining enrollment in our Minnesota institutions. Do you envision this as a way of increasing those enrollments in our state colleges and universities? And that would be to you, Commissioner.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Cleaborn. Certainly, you know, can share additional testimony when it's time, but looking at the research and, you know, extrapolating some of the data that came from the Idaho program, as well as some of the other states that have implemented, we're looking at a potential significant enrollment increase. One recent research paper looked at the impacts of these programs on Midwest states and specifically estimated for Minnesota. a potential over 10,000 additional students enrolling as a result of this program.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. Grunwald.
Madam Chair and members, the next item I'll discuss is on R12 of the side-by-side, and this is the agency administration for the Office of Higher Education.
Members, any questions? Discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. Grunwald.
Madam Chair and members, I will turn it over to Mr. Savory to continue with the differences in the Senate and House language of Article 1, and we'll be turning to page 5 of the staff side-by-side.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Savory.
Chair, the next item is on page 5 at the top of the page, labeled R13. It's the Office of Higher Education transfers.
Member, are there any questions? Okay. Please proceed, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair, the next item is on R14. It's the Minnesota State tuition rates.
Okay. Members, are there any questions? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I read the language, the Senate language is reducing state tuition in Mid-State by 5% over the two next academic years. And I'm just wondering, is Mid-State possibly here to talk to us about that, the effect on their institutions with that reduction?
We do not have them on our call today, but we will be having public testimony as soon as we are hoping to get a public testimony on Tuesday at our next meeting. We will need to get through all these provisions in Article 2, but then we will start that. Representative O'Neill, would that be a good time to get your question answered?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a little, there's a lot of differences between the House and the Senate versions, and just a quick glance, it looks like the Senate, they have a lower O&M for Mid-State, they have a reduction in tuition and a couple other things that would impact the refund and things like that. So I'm sure Mid-State would love to come and just explain the impact on them. And so we'll just say, you said Tuesday, I believe?
Yes, on Tuesday.
Thank you, Madam Chair, that'll work.
Thank you. It will be following our getting through, if we, hopefully we'll get through all our provisions today. Don't, we'll continue them on Tuesday and then move to public testimony. So, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I've had really extensive conversations. As some of you may know, I represent Moorhead, which I have MSUM and M-State in my community, and they're huge pillars in my community. We've had to have huge cuts in our faculty, which then means our programming goes down, which affects outcomes for students. And so what I can tell you, and I'm glad that they'll be here to talk more in depth with it, but I think the reality is doing a reduction in tuition by 5% is extremely detrimental to the outcome of these universities. And it's our responsibility to help invest in our next generations. I'm just adamantly opposed of this. And I think that we need to really understand the long-term ramifications of this. I would be remiss if I didn't stand up and support my community and the things that I'm hearing in this area, but I am really glad that they'll be here to just discuss this more in depth. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Is there any further discussion or questions to this provision?
Madam Chair, I should probably point out that one of the things that we've been asked to do for many, many years when it comes to college education is reduce the cost for students. And this is the first time that we've ever been given so much money from the federal government. And the provision that's in the bill is about $77 million of the federal money, which is only about 12% of the federal money. And when I look at the state law that suggests that we fund colleges at 67% and the students fund them at 33%, we have a really, really hard time getting there because of the fact that we need an extra $200 or $300 million a year in order to do that. And so this is an attempt at lowering the cost of tuition for students and using some money that was heretofore was never available for us. And so I think we have a little bit of a good argument on saying that this makes college more affordable and it uses federal money that we never had before. And it only uses about 12% of the federal money.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate the words of Senator Tomasoni that we want to do the best we can to reduce the cost of education for our students. But I am concerned because, as Representative Keeler mentioned earlier, I know pre-COVID, Moorhead, I think, cut 40 positions. And when our state institutions are faced with cutting faculty, especially at those kinds of numbers, students often can't not get the classes that they need in the time that they need them. And to that end, I wouldn't want a student to have to return another semester to try to fulfill the graduation requirements that they need. So I want us to be, when we're thinking about that cost of attendance, be holistic in our view so that, yes, tuition is one piece, but there are so many other factors that go into that. So I do appreciate the words of the senator, but I also ask that we take that really big picture view. Thank you.
Okay, member, I see that we have Representative Keeler. I see your hands up. Please proceed.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, sorry. Representative Cleburne, did you have more you wanted to say?
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Cleburne. I'm sorry. Did you have a follow-up, please? I thought you were.
No. Okay.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. And Senator Tomasoni.
Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Tomasoni, I agree with you. I don't love the idea of putting the burden back on our students, but what I've heard from actually students is that they don't mind paying tuition as long as it comes with the services that that supports them through their academic needs. You know, education and higher ed is so much more than just the classroom experience. There's mental health supports that are involved. There's other outside supports that come with that. And so I just really want us to try to collectively work to get to a middle ground that's keeps our higher ed institutions effective in the work that they do when it comes to investing in our next generation. So I do appreciate, and I'm with you on the fact that, you know, we need to move towards a more balanced financial burden on our students. I'm just not sure that this is the way to do it.
Okay. Is there any further discussion?
Just real quickly.
Oh, Chair Tomasoni.
And I'm very cognizant of the concerns, and I understand what the potential is here. However, if we are really going to make a dent in this, then we probably need a target of about $200 million. And I'm concerned that we don't have that ability to get that kind of money. I would love to advocate for it, though. And so if anybody can get us a target that's $200 million, then we might be able to solve all kinds of problems that we can't solve right now. And so while I get the idea that lowering tuition might have a detrimental effect, we really aren't taking money out of the system because the money's coming from the federal government. So if we put more money into the system on the end of whatever it is, the state money is that we give to the campuses, then we may be able to lower tuition without hurting the campuses. So it's an idea, and I'm not confident we'll get $200 million, but considering where the governor is, where the House is, and where the Senate is, I'm hoping we get a little bit bigger number.
Okay, I see another question popped up or discussion. Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good discussion. I think we can all agree that we want to see tuition costs lowered for students. It certainly, you know, I think we're number five in the nation for the average for a degreed person with a bachelor's degree for the amount of money that they owe coming out, about, $31,500. And that has an effect on the economy moving forward. So we do need to do everything we can. I've heard just about in every committee and many times about the federal funds and how we can backfill a lot of the needs for the state. But I think one of the things that we really need to know is, can these funds be used? How can these funds be used? What are the restrictions or guidelines the federal government is putting on these funds? So before we actually move forward, I think we have to have a good idea about making sure that the funds can be used appropriately in the ways that we would like to see them here in Minnesota anyway. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, please continue, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair, the next item is on R15. It's the Minnesota State Supplemental Aid to Non-Metro Colleges.
Okay. Member, is there any discussion regarding this one or questions? Okay, seeing none, please proceed. Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair, the next item is on R16. It's the Minnesota State Z Degree Textbook Program.
Members, are there any questions or discussion on this one? My view changed here for a second, so I'm going to go back to being able to see hands. Okay, there we go. I do not see any hands. Please proceed, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair, the next item is again on R16. It's the Minnesota State Mental Health Awareness Program and the Mental Health Services Appropriation.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? See Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is something that I don't recall us talking about in the House, which is establishing a peer support program, pilot program. I'm wondering if the Senate could talk just a little bit about what that means. And, you know, my undergrad is in applied psychology, so I was one of those students that sat in the counseling school and or the counseling center and did, I guess, peer-to-peer counseling. And so my concern would be, particularly with this pandemic, that these students might need a little bit more than just that. Thank you.
Who would like to answer that? Chair Tomasoni.
You're pretty good at this, Madam Chair, noticing when I come off mute that I want to speak. thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Neill, this is one of those issues that we have heard from every student group that we can possibly talk to. And I think with the COVID issue coming around, it has exacerbated the problem on all of the campuses. And I hear so much about it that it seems to me that peer group would be the way to go because the kids can actually tell us what's happening and how they are being affected by the mental illness or the mental problems that are happening on campus as a result of not only what's been there previous to COVID, but how COVID has been a contributing factor. So it seems to me that we got to get a handle on this eventually. And NAMI is one of the organizations that strongly supports doing something in this area. So I think we got to get to it.
I see Ms. White has her hand up to, I believe, answer your question. I'm going to check with her. Ms. White? Well, we will, you're on mute if you're talking, and then I'll, if it doesn't come off mute, then we will move back to Representative O'Neill. Here we go. It's on mute.
Madam Chair, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
We will actually, Representative O'Neill, be going over the components of this program in Article 2. The peer support portion of it is only one component of the mental health awareness program established in the Senate bill.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay, so I'll just hold my discussion until we get to the policy portion of it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other further discussion or questions? Okay, please proceed, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair, the next item is R16 to R17. It's the Minnesota State Basic Needs Appropriation.
Oh, are there any, I see Ms. White has her hand up. Maybe it's from last time. Okay, I see her hands down. Are there any questions on this provision? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair, we'll skip down to the next page, which is starting at the top of page 6, and it's R24. It's the University of Minnesota Health Sciences Special, specifically regenerative medicine.
Okay, members, are there any questions? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually had a conversation with President Gabel today and Steve Sviggum, specifically asked them about this provision, about repealing the $2 million from the regenerative medicine program. And I had asked them if that had come from the U, like they were downsizing or changing direction or something. And they said it had not. And I'm just wondering if the Senate could explain where that came from and what were your thoughts about that?
Who would like to answer that? Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This came, the whole regenerative medicine thing came to me a while ago from a constituent of mine. And as we looked into it, you know, a number of the grants that they were sending out were going to schools. It was, you know, when this was first brought forward, it was all supposed to be about doing research and developing new things. And a bunch of the money was going out to schools just to coloring books and things of that nature. So we had many discussions and we looked at I talked to a number of people and we used some of this money that we peeled back from them to go to the spinal cord injury folks. We felt they were doing much more work in that area. So the money that has been going to research, we left there, but the money that had been being used in other areas, we just have the proposal to pull that back and give it to the spinal cord folks to keep doing that work.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Senator Rarick and I don't talk about everything, apparently. So I appreciate that. And I was wondering, because I actually
get used to that. Get used to that.
Chair Tomsoni, did you have something you wanted to comment?
I don't have anything I want to comment.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. So I'd actually toured the regenerative medicine program and department at the U. When I was vice chair of higher ed in the past. And so I got to see what they were doing at the bench, and it was really kind of fascinating. So I was just curious where that came from. I did not know they were spending millions of dollars outside of the U to do other things. And so now I fully understand why we wouldn't want that to happen. I certainly gave ample time for the University of Minnesota to tell me that this morning, but interesting hearing it here for the first time. So. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I support this change then.
Thank you, members. Is there any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair, that concludes the unadopted provisions. I would just point out on R19, the committee adopted the Rare Disease Council language. And then on R26, the committee already adopted the cancellation language. And that would conclude Article 1.
Well, thank you, Ms. Grunewald and Mr. Savory, for your walking us through this. Now we'll move on to provision, the Article 2, the policy provisions, and the areas that we've already had a robust conversation. I request that we be brief. I want to make sure that we have a respectful and great conversation like we've already had. So I want to make sure that that happens as well. So we will continue to move on. And Mr. Nathan and Ms. White, are you going to be guiding us through this process?
Madam Chair, yes, I'll begin.
Please proceed. Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, on page 6, we start with the House only provisions in Article 2. On R28 is the student transfer reporting requirement.
Are there any questions or discussion? Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would ask if Commissioner Olson could comment on this, on what impact it would have on his agency.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Claussen. I believe this provision came from the Minnesota Equity Partnership, Educational Equity Partnership Bill. It is an additional report that, you know, we would be required to complete, but I believe the House does include administrative funds to be able to complete the report.
Senator Claussen, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you. I appreciate getting that additional information.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I just really wanted to offer my support for this provision. I think this could be really valuable information. Something that has plagued, you know, our higher learning institutions for some time, and that is people not completing. And we really want people to start and complete. And I think this would be really helpful to understand what's really going on with that. And didn't know that it came from the work around equity, so that makes it even more interesting to me, but I think this would be a really good provision and hopefully give us some good data and information moving forward to be more supportive to the students.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Chair Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, just out of curiosity for the commissioner, do we not already know all this information?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Tomasoni. We definitely do have some of the information. We would need to compile additional data from institutions to be able to put it into one singular report. So the majority of data elements do exist out there, but have not been compiled into one place.
So then,
Chair Tomasoni,
once we compile the data, what are we going to do with it?
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni. That'll be a function of the report. There are some additional data elements requested that we would have to seek out and, you know, potentially request new pieces for. And so, although we do have a majority that exists in other places, there could potentially be data elements we don't yet have data for.
Okay, Representative O'Neill.
No, thank you, Madam Chair, I'm fine.
Okay, further discussion or questions? Okay, seeing none. Chair Tomasoni.
Just real quickly, do we have a fiscal note on this, Commissioner, or do we know how much it might cost to do
Commissioner, this? Yes, sorry, excuse me. Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Tomasoni. I believe there is a fiscal note. I don't have that exact cost right in front of me. Maybe fiscal staff have access to that.
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to search the archive and return to the committee with that information, but I don't have it right at my fingertips.
We have two reports, and I remember one was like $75,000, but I'm not going to commit to that, but that's what I recall. We'll get that information back from Mr. Savory. Chair Tomasoni. Nope. Okay. So any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, the next House only position on R37 to R39 is the Aspiring Minnesota Teachers of Color Scholarship Program.
Okay, members, is there any discussion or any questions about this provision? Seeing none, please. Oh, I see Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry it took a minute to get it up there. No, I just want to offer my support for this too. This is
Senator Clark. Yeah, there you go. Sorry. I was just going to encourage him to mute, but he did on his own. So go ahead, Representative O'Neill. I apologize for interrupting you.
No, very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarship Program, I'm not sure if the Senate heard this language, but it's really important. And it was, yeah, Representative Keeler, I hope, will speak to this, but it's so impactful. And she and I had a conversation kind of offline on the House floor. One of those rare moments we actually were on the House floor together. And I had mentioned that I grew up in Bagley and surrounded by three reservations and had multiple classmates that were Native American, but didn't have any teachers that were Native American. And so when we started to talk about this, I kind of went back in my memories and realized that even though so many of my classmates were Native, there weren't any teachers that were. And she just told this fantastic story. And I don't know if she has a moment to just, you know, say how impactful that is, but I just think this is such a good plan to try to increase the teachers of color in the system, and I'm incredibly supportive of that. So I see she's going to say something now. Thank you, Representative Keeler.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. So I will just take a minute to highlight this. This is work that has been going on for a long time. As many of us know, there are huge disparities in our graduation rates when it comes to our BIPOC students. And when I was doing my master's program in educational leadership, I did my practicum. I had talking circles around the barriers of education, aside from academic rigor. And the number one thing that my community talked about was the lack of representation. I have a high school diploma, an associate's degree, a bachelor's, and a master's, and I have never had a teacher or professor in the front of a classroom who looks like me. And that does make a difference. It does have a different impact on the way that education is designed for us. And so what this does is it just creates an opportunity for us to be meaningful in the work that we do moving forward, to get teachers who actually reflect who our students look like. In the long-term hope that what this does is not just putting teachers in front of us, but it's actually working aggressively to close those achievement gaps for all of our populations. And so I appreciate Representative O'Neill's support and everybody else who's been really supportive and has worked on this behind the scenes. And I would be more than happy to stand for questions on this. In the work that I did, I worked in Indian education for a long time, and I work in multicultural recruitment and higher education. And I just really see this as a tool for us to move to a better future. So thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, the next House-only provision is on R39 to R41. It's the House's new underrepresented teacher candidate grant program.
Members, is there any discussion or questions? Okay. Seeing none, please proceed.
Chair, on R44, house-only provision, the student loan refinancing section.
Members, does anyone have any questions? I see Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This self-refi bill was my bill back in 2014, I believe. And at that time, what we wanted to accomplish is to provide an option for students that had taken out loans during their college years, and they could refinance for lower interest rates. And to do that, we set up pretty stringent requirements. We found over the years that it's been a highly popular program. It's been very successful. And so what we're really looking to do is to loosen up some of those requirements, like the earnings to debt rate, and also increasing the amounts that a person could qualify for from $70,000 to $250,000. So again, it's been a good program. It's been proven over time. And these are positive changes that we can make to access more students. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
On R53 to R56, this is the risk analysis provision the House carries.
Is there any questions or discussion? Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some of us have gone through the Argosy closing and know what devastating experience that was for students. And I think anything that we can do to ensure that as much as possible that we wouldn't have another college or higher education institution shutting down without notifying students and leaving them in the lurch and the state in the lurch, I think everything that we can do in positive means would be a good move forward. So I would support this.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe this came out of the agency's provisions that I thought they were both in the House and the Senate, but I see now this is a House-only provision. And I'm just wondering if OHE could explain why this provision was only in the House. And I do see that there is the data classification portion of it. And I'm wondering, before OHE says anything, if Madam Chair, if you could explain, is that the part that we changed in judiciary to tighten up the language around data privacy?
Yes. Let's see. I'll make sure I'm off mute. Yes, Representative O'Neill, and there's some additional information that was sent to us today, so I'm glad you are asking OHE. They can provide some more information about this as well. Would we want Commissioner Olson or Ms. Oliver?
This is Nikki Oliver. I can speak if you don't mind.
Please, Ms. Oliver.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the language, you all did add this, the data provision piece was actually related to this 529 plan. So this was in the bill in the Senate. The Senate did not keep the risk analysis language. I think part of it was because of in their data committee, organization, Minkoji, that is adamant about transparency in government, had concerns about subdivision 4 of the language. So there was an oral amendment, a lot of discussion and an oral amendment in that committee. After the committee, our agency went back to the institutions and also had conversations with Minkoji and developed an agreed upon language for that subdivision. From my understanding, everyone else is on board with all of the rest of the language in the bill, and all the external stakeholders, meaning Minkoji and the institutions, are supportive of, I believe I sent you all some language to consider of updating subdivision 4. And I think from my understanding, and that would be a question to the Senate, that was kind of the holdup or the reason it wasn't in their final bill, was that subdivision 4 piece in the conversation that was had in the other committee.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would that happen to have been Senator Rarick's provision that he was working on?
Senator Rarick.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that's the part of the bill, the agency bill that was drafted as a separate bill that I took to civil law that we spent way too much time on. So I do believe we're still, you know, working on that. I think Ms. Oliver noted that they worked on it some more with the group. And so we can probably have more discussions around that at a later time.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Yeah, thank you. We just need agreed upon language and we're good to go. So if that's already been agreed upon, I'm looking forward to Ms. Oliver's language and we can move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you. And I just wanted to make sure that we let the people who are watching today know about this attachment that we received. And I just want to say that when I read it, a couple of things stuck out in it, is that they've spent more than a year working on this language with the stakeholders, and that the language has been, the private institutions have also seen it, and they provided input and had no objections. Is that correct, Ms. Oliver?
Ms. Oliver.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. Yes, as far as the risk analysis language that's currently in the House bill, yes, we worked with the stakeholders on this. The institutions vetted it. Everyone was in agreement. And like I said, in the Senate Committee on Data, an organization raised concern about only Subdivision 4, which we have worked out language for that piece. But yes, over here, it's been worked on.
Yep. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you. And Chair Bernardi, if we go into deep discussions about this, I think it might be good to think about some of the students who were impacted by the risks that they faced with the.
Okay. And I have my, thank you, Representative Cleavorn. I have my Kleenex next to me. So I don't think a dry eye in that in those committee hearings when the ARCSC students shared their story with. So I'm really, want to say I'm really proud of the bipartisan support that we have done in not only the Minnesota House, but along with the Senate. And we've gotten phase one done, and now phase two will be, I'm expecting to be accomplished this year, and I'm very grateful that we are able to help prevent this from happening to other students in the future. Are there any other discussion or comments? Okay. Please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, the next House-only provision is on R61 to R62. This is the House's concurrent enrollment grant program.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm a strong supporter of concurrent enrollment programs around the state as a high school principal. I was on the board at the University of Minnesota for concurrent enrollment and always tried to increase the number that we were offering in our school. The one thing I would say that I'd like to see the Office of Higher Education just have greater discretion in how the funds could be used. I know the House is very specific about dedicating specific amounts to certain programs and for certain uses, I should say. And I'd like to see a little bit greater discretion that they can move some of those funds around based upon some of the needs that are occurring in our schools. So just a comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion or questions? Okay, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, reverting back to the question around the House's position to increase the administration funds, that was part of House File 2393, and at that time, the fiscal note was still pending. But in conversations with the Office of Higher Ed, Those reports were listed to cost $70,000, and that was the amount that was included to increase the administrative line for that particular purpose.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, the next House-only provision is on R67 of the side-by-side. This is the data practices classification for the state's 529 college savings plan.
Members, any discussion or questions? Okay, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, on R70 to R71 is a House-only provision. This is the Career and Technical Educator Pilot Project.
Members, any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, on R71 of the side-by-side, the next House-only provision is the Study and Report on the Work-Study Program.
Members, any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed.
Finally, the last House-only provision, Madam Chair and members, on R71, this is a reviser instruction related to the Hunger Free Campus designation. There's not a lot of substance to this provision on its own, but it sort of reflects the two chambers' different approaches to the changes that they've made to this program.
Members, is there any discussion or are there any questions? Seeing none, I believe we can proceed to Ms. White. Is that correct, Mr. Hopkins? You are complete with your presentation?
Yes, that's right, Madam Chair.
At this point in time? Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Ms. White.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. This is Joan White from the Office of Senate Counsel and Research. Can you hear me okay?
We can, thank you.
Okay, I'm actually in the middle of Wisconsin right now in transit to my son's college graduation. So, technology is amazing.
Okay, we want you to do everything that's legal. And so if you have to pull over, please do. And congratulations to your son.
Thank you. I'm not driving. So I have my little office set up in here, so it's perfect. I will be going through the Senate-only provisions, and starting on page 8, on the top, is the first hunger-free campus designation section, and actually there are 4 Senate-only provisions related to hunger-free campus designation based on the way the Senate approached this issue. And when we go through the differences in the next page, that will compare the House and Senate hunger-free designation section related to that we amended in the MnState chapter of law. So I'm not sure if you want to go through these all separately, if you want to discuss them as one package. I'm happy to do either.
Well, what I would recommend is whatever is the most efficient and effective way of doing it, I would like to proceed that way. And if any of the members object, please let me know.
Madam Chair.
Chair Tomasoni.
Just a suggestion. I think you've been really doing really well and just asking if anybody has any questions and we can find out from there because the staff can give us as much information as we want. Have any questions, there's no reason to. But I should add one thing about the Hunger Free Campus, because the Senate did work really closely with some student groups, and they initially proposed this Hunger Free stuff in 2019, and some other students asked to be included. So if there are differences in the language, it's a result of the process the Senate went through in speaking with these groups.
Members, are there questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair. The next section is the Fostering Independence Higher Education Grants, which is a Senate-only provision. There was a question previously related to whether this includes summer school, and it does include summer school. But OHE recommended that we do clarify that in the language if this provision is indeed adopted.
Member, are there any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. White.
The next is the competitive grant for Hunger Free Campus.
Is there any, do we have any questions or discussion by members? Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I don't really have a question. I guess I just want to state that we know that food matters. I mean, like if we're hungry in any situation, it affects our learning. And we know that in K-12, we know that as adults. I mean, I feel like we all need to have food as our fuel to do really well. And so I just want to encourage us. I really like this language. I like that our students are the ones that brought it to us. I know that we're different in the language, but the end goal here is to make sure that our students have access to food. The only piece that I would encourage us to expand on a little bit more, and if somebody can, I haven't read through all of it, I apologize in advance, but we do have a lot of students who are in higher ed that have families or young kids as well that maybe aren't in the K-12 system yet taking advantage of food. Is this open to, like, I know we have the child care grants, but would this hunger-free campus include if we have a student who has young kids at home as well?
I would, Ms. White, can you let us know if the language allows for that or includes that?
Madam Chair and members, this is open to any student who needs food. So yes, it would be open to the students who have families.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, I'll look through the language a little bit more. I just want to make sure that there's no barriers to, you know, how much food somebody could take. Because my guess is they're like pantries, food shelves. What kind of food would be there, that there would be no restriction that this is only for the student and not also for any other outside needs if they have young children at home. I'll probably ask more questions down the road as we navigate through this. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other further discussion or questions? Thank you. Please proceed, Ms. White.
The next section, Senate-only section, is the Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Repayment Program.
Okay. 44 to 47.
Yes.
Is there are there any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. White.
The next section, Madam Chair, is on R62 to R63, the Mental Health Awareness Program at MnState.
Are there any questions or discussion? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So here's where I was going to ask about the peer support pilot programs. I'm wondering if Chair Tomasoni could explain a little bit more about where that came from, how that's going to be structured.
Chair Tomasoni.
And Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, like I said, we've been talking with all the different student groups, and it has definitely been one of these kind of things that we need to address. And so the peer groups are a really good way to do it because of the fact that they are actually the ones that are experiencing it. But if you want specific answers to your question, I should probably have Ms. White just address them.
Ms. White.
Madam Chair and members and Representative O'Neill, the provision under the Senate bill requires a web page at each. It includes several things related to mental health, including a web page at each institution that includes links to existing self-assessment resources, mandatory mental health training, a session at student orientation that includes information about maintaining good mental health, message strategy to send to students, information on available mental health resources, the distribution of the suicide prevention helpline and text line. And it also allows the schools to establish a peer support program and provide, the Senate rider provides grants for that purpose.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the grants are specifically for the peer support pilot project, or is it for the entire thing to add components to their website and links to resources?
The appropriation is for the entire mental health awareness program. I think Ms. Grunwald may mind to correct me if I'm wrong. And then the funding can be used for peer support. If the funding is not used for the peer support, it will be used for the other components of the program.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just say that when I've talked to faculty at Minn State in particular, their concern was that the on-campus counselors, so the counseling centers on campus, like I was at Bemidji State and we had a counseling center, because of lack of funds, they've been laid off, dismissed, they closed, whatever it is, depending on the campus. And their concern was that they didn't have that resource on campus anymore. And even though there may be technically counselors in the community, they may not have availability. So that's what I'm hearing from the faculty themselves. And I would have concerns that this doesn't quite fix the problem that we have, which is we actually need trained therapists to, if we could have them on campus, that'd be ideal, but I think this goes a little ways, but it certainly doesn't go, I don't think it goes quite far enough. I think we actually need some money to actually fund professional counselors on campuses like we used to have. So that would be my concern. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I see that Ms. Grunwald has her question up. I am wondering if she would like to add something to that answer.
Madam Chair, yes, the total appropriation for the Mental Health Awareness Program in the Senate language is $1.5 million in fiscal year 22, and of that amount, $500,000 must be used for training opportunities, and then $200,000 must be used for the grants that Ms. White detailed.
Okay, thank you. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, I am in huge support of mental health awareness programs. I think that it's really important that we look at our students holistically. A couple concerns or questions that I have that if somebody could answer is, again, I represent Greater Minnesota. One of the biggest things that we talk about is broadband issues and not always having, like, I know that sounds silly that we don't have access to great interactive websites all the time. I know that you talked about a website being able to utilize for self-assessment resources and different things. Is there a way for a student to call in and do these assessments and have supports walking through them as well? I'm not sure what extra cost that would be other than having like a person on the other line to help walk them through that or an automated system. I just don't want us to forget about the fact that a lot of Minnesota has a hard time with broadband. So that's my first question. And then I do have a second question.
Representative Keeler, who did you want to direct that question to?
I guess whoever knows the bill well enough or knows where we would go with this, if that's an opportunity or something that's been brought up in the Senate side of hearings.
Let's see, who would like to answer that question? Chair Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, that might be one of those questions we will have to ask the Minn State when we have them in.
Representative Keeler.
That's great. I just feel like I always have to advocate for the fact that not everybody has great access to to websites and web pages still.
You keep it up, because I'm telling you, rural Minnesota needs it badly. And if we ever discovered how badly we need it, COVID was the one thing that made us realize how bad some of the services in rural Minnesota. So I agree with you 100%.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Senator Tomasoni, we are on the same page with working on that better. My second question / suggestion is, again, when it comes to culture and it comes to working with individuals around mental health, I'm just wondering if when we do training and we put money towards training, is there conversations around making sure that some of that training is designed around cultural inclusiveness and cultural practices, so that we're approaching all of our students from a lens and a space that is common to them and their beliefs.
Chair Tomasoni, how do you want to handle that?
I don't know that that's a question or if it's just a comment.
Okay. Oh. Representative Keeler, do you have a follow-up?
No, that's it. I guess I'll just put that out there. And then as we work through it, I'll just continue to advocate for that piece. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I don't know that these are questions, but comments. I was concerned about Representative Keeler's question as well. So to make sure that telehealth is available through audio call is, I think, key, and I didn't see that in the language. The other piece I wanted to make sure is if we were to adopt this, I would like to see language around not supplanting professional staff, to Representative O'Neill's point. If they have a professional staff in place, I wouldn't want them to be terminated because we're now using student counselors. And then I think it might be good to know what, maybe if we're looking at best practices, what kind of student to professional ratio might be required here, to make sure that if students are giving advice to other students, that there is some accountability and responsibility there to make sure that they're getting quality care. And it's not just one-time training and now you're off to deal with someone's mental health crisis. That wouldn't be a good plan.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. White.
Madam Chair, members, the next section is the student success basic needs barrier reduction.
Members, any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. White.
The next section is the University of Minnesota Hunger Free Campus Designation.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Ms. White.
The next section is on R68, credit for prior learning.
Any discussion or any questions? Representative Cleaborn. You're on mute, Representative Cleaborn.
Oh, darn. I thought I'd get through this without doing that. I'm just curious as to what the criteria and how is this done over the, and again, this is probably more of a statement. We could have testifiers talk about this, but exactly what would this look like and how would we decide which work experiences would be acceptable and which ones would not? So that's just kind of a statement for a further conversation. Thank you.
Okay. Any other further discussion, questions? Okay, please proceed, Ms. White.
The next is the report on expense patterns of public higher education institutions.
Now your volume isn't as good as it was before. I just want to let you know that it's a little bit difficult to hear you. Oh, maybe it's a low-lying spot.
Is this better?
Oh, that's good.
Okay, the next is on R69 and R70, report on expense patterns of higher education institutions.
Members, any questions? Discussion? Okay, please proceed, Ms. White. Okay.
Actually, Madam Chair, Mr. Hopkins is going to take over now.
Thank you very much. Best wishes to your son and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Excited about that. So that's an exciting thing that happened right during our committee, being able to hear about the accomplishments of Ms. White's child. So that's pretty cool. So Senator Claussen.
I want to congratulate the White family for having a college graduate in a few hours. But I also know that their child, I think it's their son, is actually attending an institution out of state. So there's an example of a student who left Minnesota for their education. And Ms. White, I hope he's coming back to Minnesota.
I hope so too, Senator Claussen. Thank you.
Okay, tell him he's got a big invitation to come back to Minnesota.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Chair Tomasoni.
Ms. White, for the record, Senator Claussen had a great big smile on his face when he said that. So he doesn't wish your kid went out of state.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Right. Yeah, sometimes technology, you don't get the nuances. So now we are going to move to, Mr. Hopkins, you are proceeding?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, now we'll move on to sections that both the House and the Senate carry, but with differences on R27 to R28. This is the transcript access section.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? I do not see any, so please proceed. Oh, I miss Senator Claussen.
I think one of the things that we should probably have place a limit on that as far as the debt owed. I know that the House has that as a provision, and I think that would be important, or we could have a student that owes several thousand dollars and might be something that we need to look at as we have further discussions.
And I would just like to add, I would be interested in knowing if staff can look into, or even OHE later on, is what are the factors in which somebody requests a transcript for? So beyond prospective employer or graduate school, are there other elements? So you don't have to answer it right now, but I am interested in knowing about that in the future. Okay, so members, any further questions or discussion? Okay, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, on R28, the two chambers have differences regarding the state grant program's assigned family responsibility.
Members, are there any questions or discussion? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Senate version obviously is a lot better for students. I mean, they took it down by a lot. So, you know, you can see the percentages drop. So I'm wondering, obviously, higher amounts are going out for state grants per student, which means probably less students are going to get it, because I don't think they increased the amount of grants more than we did. And I'm wondering if they've done any calculations as to how many less students are going to get grants, or do they have any numbers besides just the percentages as far as
this group is going to get an average of $300 more per student or $1,000 more per student. I'm just wondering if they have any other information that would be helpful for me to decide what. I like it that the students are paying less overall, but they have any more information.
Chair Tomasoni, I see your.
Madam Chair, it's hard to see that even more students will be getting grants, and the state grant program is fully funded in our bill. This is also in conjunction with a calculation that we received from OHE about what happens when we reduce tuition. And so as a result of that, we were able to do some of the percentages that you can see, but we did not deny anybody that would be eligible for a grant.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Okay, so maybe I'm not understanding what you're doing here. To me, it looks like you're reducing the amount that the student has to pay the institution. The grant goes up, which means more students will get. So help me understand what you're doing here, and maybe I'm misunderstanding what this is.
And Chair Tomasoni, I see that Ms. Oliver has her hand up. I would like to, it sounds like, yep. Please, Ms. Oliver, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill and Senator Tomasoni. If you guys are referring to the changes in the state grant, the percentages, the reduction percentages and the amount we would assume those individuals would have to pay. So when you reduce the percentages, that means you're calculating less in their payment. So any change in reduction is benefiting event, so they would see an increased state grant amount. We can work on getting you, I believe your question, Representative O'Neill, was regarding what is the difference between, for all of your changes from both the House and the Senate, there's going to be an increase in students being able to receive grants, but we can get you the difference between the two. Like what's the difference in the increase in number of students being served from the Senate provisions and the House provisions? I believe that's your question, right?
Representative O'Neill.
You've got it, Ms. Oliver. That's exactly it. I'm just trying to understand these percentage changes and how it has a net effect on how many more or less students will be served and how that affects the grant pool of money.
Yeah, we can bring all of that back for you all, because I know you all are short on time too, next week when we have, when you all are having public testimony around that, if you don't mind. And I can also send an email too with the numbers.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, members, on R29 to R30, again, the state grant program, this shows the differences in the two chambers for the approach to the changes in living and miscellaneous expenses.
Members, is there any discussion or are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
On R35, this shows the differences between the two chambers' approaches to the child care grant changes.
Member, are there any questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
On R41 to R43, these show the changes that both chambers made to the student teacher grant program.
Members, is there any discussion or questions? Seeing none, please proceed.
On R47 to R50, these show the changes between the two chambers regarding dual training competency grants.
Members, is there any questions or discussion? Okay, please proceed.
On R64 to R65, these show differences to the Minnesota State Hunger-Free Campus designation.
Members, is there any discussion or are there any questions? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
On R65 to R66, these show differences related to the Z degree program at Minnesota State.
Members, questions or discussion? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
On R67, these show changes to differences in the changes to the Workforce Development Scholarship section.
Members, any discussion or are there any questions? Representative O'Neill.
Just really quickly, I see that the Senate adds construction to the list of high demand fields, and we don't. I'm surprised that Representative Meckland didn't rise to that. He's pretty passionate about that. And I would just ask that we could adopt that addition. I think that's really valuable, particularly right now when housing is kind of booming again. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Christensen. And you are on mute.
As we've gone through all of these provisions, I have had little questions, but I really look forward to the testimony on Tuesday. I think it's going to clear a lot of things up for me. I don't know about anyone else, but there are a few things and details that, I look forward to learning about on Tuesday. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Very good point. We always, value public testimony. So thank you very much for making that comment, Vice Chair Christensen. Okay, so seeing no further questions on that, can you please proceed, Mr. Hopkins?
Finally, Madam Chair and members, the last differences section on R68 to R69, these show the two chambers' different approaches to the direct admissions pilot program.
And are there any questions? We did discuss that quite in depth. Are there any further questions or is there discussion? Okay, I don't see any. Wow, I should have had a drum roll before that last one. Mr. Hopkins, is there anything else that you need to share with us today?
No, Madam Chair and members, the remainder of the sections are identical between the two institutions. So.
Thank you very much. Members, we did it. I want to thank our staff for helping us navigate through that and get us more familiar with each of the body's positions in our bill. So thank you very much, staff. And members, thank you for the thoughtful discussion and all the great questions. And we look forward to the public testimony. And so I want to just give a little bit of lay of the land of our schedule coming that we've been able to identify up to this point. So the House is in training tomorrow for diversity and inclusion and some comprehensive training. And then we will be coming back on Tuesday to start public testimony. So we hope that we ask people to sign up in advance so that we can get them looped in and be able to begin that on Tuesday. Members, do you have any questions or
Madam
any
Chair.
Discussion? Yeah, Chair Tomasoni.
Just real quickly, I want to reiterate what you just said in thanking the staff for the great job they did. And I want to thank Ms. White for literally going the extra mile to be here.
Literally. Representative O'Neill.
What time did you say on Tuesday?
I did not say it, and thank you for asking. Oh. We will start at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, you're welcome. And thank you, Minnesota House Information, for making this available to the public today. Senator Claussen.
Just a question about testifiers. If they choose to testify, who should they be signing up with, House or Senate?
I have the gavel on Tuesday, so the House, and if our staff here has any further instructions that we need to provide, let me know, but it would be the House. Okay, somebody's not muted. So, Mr. Herring.
I think, yeah, since we'll have the gavel, we'll be posting this later today, so it'll be public, but people can email me to sign up for testimony, and that'll be in the posting too.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, and I also want to thank the Office of Higher Education for being here today and being able to answer our questions. We appreciate that. So members, I don't see any more hands up. And again, want to thank everyone for the great hearing today. And I look forward to seeing you Tuesday, 1 o'clock. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.